From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump renewed his attacks on Robert Mueller today prior to the special counsel's planned appearance before Congress on Wednesday. The political stakes are high for the president, but also for Democrats. California Congressman Adam Schiff said yesterday that many Americans are still not aware of the Mueller report's findings, including the president's repeated efforts to thwart the Russia investigation.
That's a pretty damning set of facts that most American people are not familiar with. And of course, the president keeps on trying to deceive them about those facts. But who better to bring them to life than the man who did the investigation himself?
Coming up on Forum, we preview Mueller's testimony and the week in politics. And that's all coming up next after this. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Special Counsel Robert Mueller heads to Capitol Hill on Wednesday for his long-awaited testimony. Democrats hope the appearance will capture the public's attention and highlight the Mueller report's most damaging findings. But has America moved on? Coming up in this hour of Forum, we'll preview Mueller's testimony in the week in Washington. And joining us is Jessica Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School. And welcome back to the Forum program, Jessica Levinson. Good to have you.
Thanks so much for having me back.
And also glad to have Matt Shoup with us. Joins us by phone this morning, principal with Praetorian Public Relations. He also chairs the Contra Costa County Republican Party. Welcome, Matt Shoup.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning to you. Glad to have you. Also glad to have Jamil Smith with us, who is a senior writer for Rolling Stone. Good to have you as well. Welcome, Jamil Smith.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you all aboard here. And Jessica Levinson, let me begin with you, and let's begin with a political question. We'll get into the Mueller testimony that's anticipated in a big way by both sides of the political spectrum. But I'd just like your take about really what's happening vis-a-vis the condemnation of the president that came out of the House of Representatives for racism and the fact that he seems to be making race at this early juncture with 16 months to go a centerpiece of his campaign for 2020.
Well, I think that this is part of the president's strategy, which is not really to reach out to the swing voters in the swing districts. It's not really to try and get moderates or independents, but it's to try and keep, solidify, grow, and energize his base. So I think with a tweet that frankly comes straight out of the old-school racist textbook of let's send these four female women of color who are members of Congress, quote-unquote, back, I think what he's doing is he's obviously using a very racially charged phrase and trying to excite his base. If you looked at the rally last week where they started those chants of send her back, I think he knows who he's playing to. And I think that if you look at the Electoral College and if you look at his strategy, it really is to try and keep those Trump voters excited, to try and make sure that they come out in 16 months for him. And frankly, it might be a winning strategy.
How do you read it, Jamil Smith?
Well, I read it as the same way he's, he tried it before. I mean, this is an old strategy that worked for people well before Trump. I mean, this is the same thing that Republican Party has been trying before when their ideas didn't work. And they basically, look, you have to understand that Republican Party is fighting a losing battle demographically. The Republican Party is seeing the country get browner a lot faster, perhaps maybe than they even anticipated. And frankly, they're seeing their ideas frankly, fail on a large scale, and they're seeing them fail at least on a national level. They may be selling on a state and local level, and they may be thriving, in fact, on a state and local level. But on national elections, they're failing, and they need to essentially game the Electoral College in order to win. And they see how Trump was able to use race and racism in order to do that.
Let me get a response from Matt Shoup, who, again, is head of the Contra Costa County Republican Party. And particularly, I'd like you, Matt Shoup, to address what we heard from Stephen Miller, a president's advisor, over the weekend on Fox, where he said the president loves his country. It's a colorblind society that he can criticize it. It's not racial at all. And that's, in fact, a charge deployed by the left, Stephen Miller says, to suppress speech.
I actually agree with that. It's interesting, being a Republican in the Bay Area, I'm often asked by Democrats, if I'm so critical of the policies of the Bay Area and the state, why do I live here and I should go to a Republican state? I've actually had clients ask that on KQED by Democrats before. And I think what he was doing was questioning, you know, these four congresswomen, you know, who are very outspoken in their criticism of the country. I don't think that race had a thing to do with it. The other thing that's not being, you know, discussed here is we're now talking about, you know, four of the most extremist members of the Democratic Party and not one of the or some of the 20-something Democratic candidates for president. So he's kind of sucked the oxygen out of the Democratic primary and has deprived them of very valuable earned media and fundraising ability. And I think that goes to the larger strategy of, as Jessica said, the winning strategy. And I think he's done a very good job at determining the tempo and the narrative of the campaign.
And would you agree with the president when he says a statement that sounds like he's a mind reader, these four women do not love this country and they should apologize to the United States and to Israel?
I think that they've been some of the most outspokenly critical people of this country and especially Israel as well. And I think that, you know, our country is not perfect and it never will be, but I think that it also should be respected, and I think this country is the closest attempt to perfection of any country that's been attempted in humanity. And I think that they are not giving the country enough credit, and I think it's a shame.
Jamil Smith, do I hear some laughter from you?
Yes, I think you should try living in this country as a person of color. Sir, I let you speak. I'd ask for the same respect in return. I ask that you try living in this country as a person of color, in a neighborhood that has been systemically oppressed, such as the Bronx. You know, town like Cincinnati, where Ayanna Pressley is from, in neighborhoods that have been systemically discriminated against, and try to tell me that criticizing this country is not actually the most patriotic thing that you can do. What these people are trying to do is trying to improve this country. They're trying to actually hold this country accountable. They're trying to actually say, we want this country to hold true to the promises that they have made to all citizens. And what this president is saying that what you're doing is by trying to have that, you know, hold this country accountable, we're going to eject you from the country.
Well, Matt Shoup, you know, the president has put out some strong criticism of America, too, in tweets.
Well, hold on. I want to clarify. He did not say that we're going to eject you. He's asking to leave. And I agree with you.
He sat there for 13 seconds while his crowd said, send her back. He sat there for 13 seconds and said nothing.
Jamil, let him respond, and then we'll bring Jessica Levinson back into this.
You know, he's not talking about ejecting them. And, you know, always through these elections, you hear a lot of, you know, celebrities and whatnot say, oh, if Trump's going to win, we're going to, you know, move to Canada and whatnot.
Well,
but the point,
choice.
And hold on really quick, though, I want to get this point is I agree with you. I think there's been some horrible, terrible racism in this country, and we're on a constant strive to improve it. And that's exactly how it should be. And I do agree with you that criticizing the country is very patriotic, and that's why we have a First Amendment. And, you know, the First Amendment is incredibly important. And you have a lot of people on the left now that are trying to suppress freedom of speech and the First Amendment. And it's unfortunate. But no, I agree that these things should be addressed.
Let me go back, if I may, to Jessica Levinson, because I want to talk about how all this is going to play out, particularly since I think, as you put it, Jessica Levinson, there's going to have to be some daylight created between Barr, the Attorney General Bill Barr, and Bob Mueller, who will be testifying. You said he's basically a hostile witness.
Yeah, if it's okay, I'd like to go back to the previous argument that was just happening and say a couple of things. One is the best way you can respect our country and respect the First Amendment is actually to criticize it. And that's because we know that if the First Amendment protects anything, it protects government speech, and specifically speech that is actually critical of the government. Because when we added the First Amendment, we understood that the people who were most likely to try and censor us, the people who were most most likely to be worried about criticism, it's actually the government itself. So the First Amendment is a protection for individuals, essentially saying we know it's going to be human nature for the government to try and silence us.
And forgive me, you're talking about individuals who are all American citizens.
Exactly. The other thing that I would say is I think that we are kind of unfairly lumping all of the members of Congress, the four women, the quote-unquote squad who President Trump criticized, I think we're unfairly lumping them together. And I think we can simultaneously do two things, or I hope we can, which is to say Representative Omar, in particular, has made comments that I think are really troubling, not about Israel, but using anti-Semitic tropes. And we often kind of look at criticism of Israel as if it's inherently anti-Semitic. I don't think it is, but I do think that she has made some statements that are really problematic. We don't have to make her a hero in order to criticize the president. It's a gray world, and we can do both of those things. We can say we don't like what certain members of Congress have said. We don't support them, but that doesn't mean it is okay in any world to tell a sitting member of Congress, because you did the thing that we should cherish the most, which is try and make our country better by criticizing it, then you should go back.
Doubtless we'll hear from our listeners on that, but I want to just steer you, if I may, to the other thing that has to do with the impact of all this on the hearings that are going to be taking place beginning Wednesday with Robert Mueller, who led the investigation. There's been a time lag. There's a lot of concern about how this might affect or not affect. Subpoenas have been sent out, which have been ignored. I mean, the House of Representatives has not exactly been, shall we say, as efficacious as a lot of people would like to see. And a lot of people would like to see this lead to crimes of, in fact, Jerry Nadler said something to this effect, that there's going to be a fleshing out of a different narrative, he hopes, that will lead to high crimes and misdemeanors and an impeachment, perhaps.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. And look, people can absolutely say, well, look, Robert Mueller said, when we heard from him, when he held that press conference, he basically said 17 different ways, Congress, please don't call me. It's all in the report. I don't want to testify before you. If you ask me a question, I'm going to say turn to page 252, paragraph 3, and read aloud. So he really, in that way, as you said, I think is kind of coming as a hostile witness. But we have to understand the reality of the situation, which is not only have most Americans not read the report, but most members of Congress have not read the report. And therefore, there is something different about televised hearings where we get to hear from the report's principal author, where we get to hear him talk about, to the extent he can, his process and what is in the report. As he said, I think that two of the most important things that could come out of this are, one, people are really going to hopefully, not grandstand, but actually ask questions. Questions about, you said there were inconsistencies or there were some differences between the way Attorney General Barr characterized the report and what's actually in the report. Point us to those specific differences. And number two, and I think this is going to be the big question and people will desperately want an answer, if this were Senator Trump and not President Trump, would there have been an indictment for obstruction of justice?
That's the first question many Democrats said they would like to put forward. Or would there be, if he were just a regular citizen, let alone Senator Trump? I'm wondering, let me go to you on this, Jamil Smith. What do you think should be highlighted here? I mean, certainly there are things in the Mueller report, there are about 10 of them, that suggest obstruction of justice. The Democrats want to flesh that all out. Where would you put the priorities?
Well, I think the priorities really should be on his acts with, you know, as since he's been president. I think, you know, frankly, you know, there's been a lot of emphasis on his finances, you know, since, you know, before he was in office, and, you know, his improprieties during the campaign. I think a lot of the emphasis should be on his acts to impede the investigation that Mueller launched. And I think that, you know, we should be talking about what he did to actually impede the investigation that Mueller was engaged in, the actions that he took to try to fire Mueller, to actually get in the way of Mueller's investigation. Those first person accounts that Mueller can offer, that his office can offer, to recount, you know, what exactly he did and what his office did to interfere with them. I think that stuff is going to be really, really valuable for the American people to hear, to understand, because the other stuff, I think, can get a little bit too much into the weeds. I think people need to understand exactly what this president is doing and how he is misusing his office to impede the investigation. I think obstruction of justice alone is an impeachable offense, and people need to understand that just purely alone as, you know, the president, you know, taking these powers and using them improperly.
Let me go back to Matt Shoup again, who is principal with the Praetorian Public Relations and chairs Contra Costa County Republican Party. Jamil Smith is senior writer for Rolling Stone, and Jessica Levinson is professor of law at Loyola Law School. Matt, a lot of Republicans are pushing back on this. Jim Jordan of Ohio said the first question he wants to ask of Mueller is, when did you discover that there was no coordination or collusion? You've got many Republicans saying what this is about is partisan politics, political theater. You're even hearing stuff about the deep state. You want to codify for us what you think?
I think that the country moved on from this subject a long time ago. And, you know, the Democratic Party is best suited by moving on, you know, from it. I think that, you know, Americans are wanting their politicians to improve their lives and to make policies that make this country better, you know, not, you know, focus on this. And I actually see a lot of irony in something else that's going on. There's a bill in the California state legislature right now that would allow non-citizens to be elected to Democratic county central committees and the Democratic or California Democratic Party to serve as delegates and as leadership positions. You know, that is directly opening up the levers of power, you know, to non-citizens, and any good, you know, Russian or Chinese or any operative from any country would be able to infiltrate this. And as we all know, the California Democratic Party is incredibly influential and powerful in California and has a lot of sway in D.C. as well. And I think that to allow foreign agents into the leadership ranks and to control large sums of money and influence is hypocritical at best to the narrative that is going against Trump. And it's been very clearly proven that, you know, Trump did not, you know, coordinate, and there was no interference by him. And I think that the Democrats have ran this ball to the ground, and it's done, and they need to move on.
I wonder, Jessica Levinson, what you think about this, particularly since many are saying it could backfire on the Democrats, particularly if Mueller is, as you've suggested earlier, kind of a hostile witness in all this and stays mum, just goes back to, you know, this is the text and look at the text.
Yeah, one thing that I just wanted to correct is there was absolutely no finding that there was no collusion here. Collusion, of course, actually isn't a legal term. There was no finding that there was no conspiracy here. What there was is a report that said, we don't think there's enough evidence to go forward. That doesn't mean it didn't happen. That means we're not going to go forward with charges. And I actually think it's really important to make that distinction.
It is. And may I ask you, there was also, of course, no exoneration, really. But doesn't this, in effect, say that when you parse it, that the president may indeed be guilty of something, but the Mueller report does not want to say that because they won't look at it as futile, perhaps, to indict a sitting president to begin with?
Well, yes. I think it's really important for people to remember that before anyone who was part of Mueller's team opened up a yellow legal pad, before they ever got a pen, there was an understanding that they were subject to Department of Justice policy, that there would not be an indictment at the end of the road. So the fact that there was no indictment doesn't mean that the president was exonerated. In fact, Robert Mueller specifically said, if we exonerated the president, we would have said so, and we didn't say so. So I do think it's vital for people to understand. I know it can sound like legalistic parsing, but the fact that there was no charge does not mean there was any conclusion that either there was no conspiracy or that there was no obstruction of justice. I also think it's important to keep those two things separate. Mueller did conclude we couldn't go forward on this conspiracy issue. On obstruction of justice, the way it reads to me is like a letter to Congress saying, I don't have any power here. We can't indict a sitting president. This is a question for you, and here I'm going to lay out all the information for you. Now, having said all of that, I still think this might be a political loser for the Democrats, in part because it just took me a while to try and untangle and explain that. And that typically is not great in politics. The other thing is, I think that it's exactly right that I don't think the election is going to be won and lost on what did Mueller find. The election will be won and lost on, do voters feel that President Trump or whoever runs against him will make their daily lives better? Voters, I think, very rationally care more about the kitchen table issues, educating their kids, health care, to the extent it affects them, you know, environmental controls, criminal justice reforms. So even though I think we've allowed the Mueller report to be mischaracterized, I still don't know that it's a political winner for Democrats. And that's why you see Nancy Pelosi really trying not to go down the impeachment route.
Well, if they have 90 for an impeachment, they still need considerably more, like about 120 some. And if it goes to the Senate, it's almost a sure bet that it will not get through a conviction. I'm just wondering, where do we stand, perhaps, and let me go to you on this, Jessica, with respect to, actually, before I do this, let me give out the phone number, because I know there are going to be a lot of people who want to weigh in here and ask questions of our guests. And so let me invite you to join us now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We do invite your calls, and please feel free to be part of this program. The number again for your calls, 866-733-6786, or join us by email. You can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. The email address is forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. I was just about to ask you, though, about censure and where that might fit into this. The Democrats have the censure power, and to some extent, maybe that's a step toward the direction of impeachment, if indeed that is where they want to go.
Yeah, thanks for asking about that. So I wrote a piece where I said, it's not clear to me that the Democrats should go down the impeachment route, but there is something short of that. We're not in an impeachment or bust world, and that is called, the process is called censure. And it's basically a public reprimand of either another elected official, or in this case, it would be the president. It doesn't mean it has to lead to impeachment, but it does mean that Democrats would have to lay out exactly why they think the president should be censured. They would have to get the support. And they would have to, in a way, do kind of a trial run of what the impeachment process would look like. It also shows to people, I think, that the alleged wrongdoing by President Trump, the actual breaking of democratic norms, is something that, even though it's symbolic, the Democrats are taking a step to say, we see this. We're trying to do something about it, as opposed to just tweeting about it or going on Sunday talk shows or other media outlets about it.
But it doesn't have much teeth, really, does it?
Not only not much teeth, I would say no teeth. It's not going to remove the president from office. It is purely symbolic. It doesn't mean that anything will happen at the end of the day other than, frankly, I think, a public shaming. And of course, it could backfire because President Trump could use that to say, look at what's happening in Congress. They're not passing laws to try and make your lives better. They're just busy, you know, going down this spiral of trying to censure me. They need to move on. They need to make your daily lives better.
This is also a president who, it sounds like an editorial comment, but I think it's safe to say most people would agree on both sides of the political aisle, difficult to shame. We're going to go to your calls and your emails when we return. I remind you, we're talking about, political events that are happening, including the Mueller investigation, which is coming up on Wednesday. That is the testimony of Bob Mueller, who led that investigation. We have Jessica Levinson, who you just heard from, professor of law at Loyola Law School. Matt Shoup is also with us, principal of Praetorian Public Relations and chair of Contra Costa County's Republican Party, and Jamil Smith, who is a senior writer with Rolling Stone. We'll hear from you when we return. If you're on the line, stay on. If you want to call us, wait till the line becomes available, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or again, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. This is the Forum program coming to you live from San Francisco, KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is an hour of the national political news in review. Matt Shoup with us, who is chair of the Contra Costa County Republican Party, and Jamil Smith, who's a senior writer for Rolling Stone, and Jessica Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School. Let me go right to your phone calls, and let's begin, John, with you. John, you're on.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to comment on Mr. Shoup's comments earlier about President Trump and his commenting on the four Democratic congresswomen as some kind of strategy that pulled, as I believe he said, sucked the air out of the Democratic primary. And I just want to say that we shouldn't ascribe architecture and planning when there's obviously chaos. I don't think there's no higher level structure to that.
All right, let me thank you for that. And go to Matt Shoup. There are those who say the president is not necessarily as calculated as perhaps you were suggesting here, but it does divide the Democrats, and it certainly plays to that.
And I hope that the Democrats continue to underestimate him, as they did in 2016.
All right, and Jamil, you want to weigh in here?
I don't think the Democrats are underestimating a guy who's locking up undocumented immigrants like vermin. So, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
Go to more calls. Let me go to Neil next. Neil, join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, picking up on the professor's comment about before Mueller's team picked up a legal pad, everyone knew that they were subject to the DOJ regulations and those or guidance, and the guidance said there would never be an indictment. I think it's fair to say back in March or April, the Democrats or the left or the anti-Trumpers, whatever you want to call them, were fairly surprised that, you know, something stronger didn't come out of the Mueller report, and now there's the line of, well, there couldn't have been an indictment, so these are just findings of fact, and Congress can do what they want with them. My question is, going back to when Mueller was commissioned, are there records or documents or statements from Rod Rosenstein or the Judiciary Committee about what they expected Mueller to do, to sort of not have an indictment but come up with findings that could be used for potential impeachment? I guess that's my question. Rather than looking backwards, what were people saying at the beginning of this show?
Well, let me go right to that. Show. Actually, Jessica Levinson, you want to comment?
Sure. I mean, I think that there was absolutely an understanding among people who work in the Department of Justice and the FBI that there was a standing Office of Legal Counsel memo that there isn't a Supreme Court case, there isn't another circuit-level case, but there's a memo that everybody was bound by. And I agree with the caller that I think that this was kind of lost in the excitement, so to speak, of the Mueller investigation. But it's something that, I mean, if you look on more of the kind of law professor blogs, I mean, people were saying, calm down. There's not going to be an indictment at the end of this. The question is whether or not there will be a specific statement, like, but for the fact that this is the president of the United States, there would be an indictment. And in fact, I think this is the place where Congress, if they could have the attorney general come in, really should have hammered the attorney general in the sense of saying, you explicitly said the fact that Mueller is deciding not to indict has nothing to do with this Department of Justice understanding. But that goes against the Mueller report itself. Please explain that distinction.
Yeah, let me go to you on this, Matt Shoup. I mean, the highest legal officer in the land, Bill Barr, essentially put out a statement with Rod Rosenstein that said the president was, by many people's judgment and by many people's vision of this, above the law. And in many people's judgment, was lying to the American people. The Mueller investigation certainly contradicts that, and Bob Mueller himself contradicted that summation that we heard from Attorney General Barr. I wonder what your response is to that.
You know, I'm not an attorney like Jessica, and I'm not an expert on this subject. So I think that it's, you know, going to be handled by the Judiciary Committee and Congress and attorneys, and I think it's going to play out the way that it does.
But we also have, and Jamil Smith, let me go to you on this, we also have these obstruction charges. For example, since we're talking about legal wrangles, White House Counsel Don McGahn, for example, said before Congress, now he can't, he's essentially absented himself from testifying further, but he said before Congress that the president ordered him to fire Mueller. I mean, that's just one example of the 10 things that were put forward in the Mueller report.
I think that first things first, I think we have to, you know, folks on the left and Democrats as a whole need to caution themselves against making Don McGahn a hero. I think they need to look at him a little bit more critically. So that's first. But I think they need to understand also that they have to, with Don McGahn, his order, this supposed order, I think they're going to need a little bit more than his word. I think, frankly, to get the American people behind, a firm conclusion that this actually happened, I think they're going to need a little bit more. And I think Mueller's going to have to present more. And, you know, frankly, I really hope that Mueller presents more to convince the American public. I hope the Democrats have a better case.
Well, there's a lot more there, Jessica Levinson. I mean, you talk about possible witnessing tampering against both Manafort and Cohen. You talk about Russian disinformation and hacking that went on during the campaign. You talk about Kerry Lewandowski essentially trying to get Jeff Sessions to take care of the Mueller investigation and isolate it and change the scope of it. There's a good deal that can be brought out. The question is, how's it going to play in Peoria, as we used to say? How's it going to play for the American people?
Yeah, I mean, so there are two separate questions, and I think we keep trying to make those parallel tracks meet, which is completely understandable. There are the legal questions surrounding the Mueller investigation, and then there's the separate track of, you know, what difference will it make politically, and or is it a political winner or loser to keep going down these questions? And I think that it's actually important to just ask Robert Mueller these questions for the sake of getting more answers for the American public, not necessarily, and I know this is going to sound so naive and ridiculous, but not just to try and win elections, but because we had an investigation into the President of the United States. I think it's important for the American public to try and understand what that investigation actually unearthed. As you said, that there's a lot there, particularly in terms of obstruction of justice, which I think people haven't really focused on, in part because the Attorney General was really smart in defining the narrative early. He came out with that 4-page summary. He basically said there's no there there. And for many Americans, that was the end of the story. And Robert Mueller had to kind of come back and try and refute that, which is always a defensive position that you don't necessarily want to be in. But as you said, there's a lot of different factual scenarios, particularly in that part two, the obstruction of justice. One of the most interesting legal questions, I think, surrounding the Mueller report is why is Don McGahn somehow a savior in the sense that he didn't actually follow through on the orders of firing people? Now, attempted obstruction of justice is still a crime, and just because somebody says, no, I won't do it, doesn't mean the attempt wasn't there. So I would love to see questionings on that issue as well.
All right, I want to read a comment from a listener named Kim who says, the hatred and racism that has occurred since Trump took office is dangerous and continues to grow. His tactics of racism, divisiveness, and anger are fascism. On the other hand, although I respect the four congresswomen in question, they are first-time congresswomen with ideas that are far more radical than most Democrats. They need to learn how to work with all Americans and stop sabotaging the 2020 election. We cannot afford to spend a week talking about this. We have an election to win. Let me bring some more callers aboard here. Let me go next to Monique. Monique, join us. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for a very interesting show. I was inspired by something that Mr. Shoup said to call in. And what it was when speaking about the four freshman congresswomen, quote-unquote, the squad, he kind of said that they hate America and used talking points that no matter which news talk show I've listened to over the past 2 days, it seems like it's the same talking point, and it's almost so scripted and never specific. Nothing that I hear actually indicates to me that these freshman congresswomen do not love this country and are not trying to make improvements. Why would anybody who hated this country actually run for Congress and take an office where you're in a public position to be criticized and viewed under a microscope? And I really wish that the GOP would stop talking in start talking in specifics instead of generalities about how other people think or what the news cycle of the day is in order to protect Trump.
Let me thank you for that call, Monique. We'll go to you on this and get a response, Matt Shoup.
He's getting everybody talking about this, and it's definitely distracting from a lot of the things the Democrats want to talk about. As the statement you read, you know, there was some truth in that, and you know, I think it's. The fascism wow. comment really kind of stood out to me because, you know, you go ask Andy Ngo about fascism, who is the Portland journalist, you know, gay Asian journalist who was attacked by a group of masked people and sent to the hospital with a brain hemorrhage. You know, these people are claiming to be anti-fascist, but they have far more in common with fascists and act far more like fascists than anybody on the right. And you know,
well, Matt, excuse me. Let me ask you, though, because I want to cut to the chase here on something, and that is there are many who have condemned the Republicans for going lockstep with President Trump and being almost like a cult. It's his party now. So you don't criticize President Trump. There are too many consequences and too many Republicans unwilling or unable to criticize the president. I mean, for example, on racism, there haven't been many voices heard from the GOP on that, have there?
It's the same thing that the Democrats don't criticize their own hardly ever. I think it was one of the four was asked the other day to, you know, condemn, I think it was like Al-Qaeda, and they wouldn't do that. You know, there's been very little, you know, condemnation of Antifa and their tactics and their attacks on people. So I think that our party could definitely be doing better at this, but there needs to be some introspection by the Democrats as well.
Jamil Smith.
Okay, listen. Okay, I'm not a Democrat. I'm a journalist. Okay, but there's been plenty of as a journalist, I deal in facts. There's been plenty of rebuttals with regards to Al-Qaeda. I can't even believe we have to say this. Al-Qaeda, with regards to Democrats, with regards to Ilhan Omar, she chose not to dignify the question, not to, you know, ignore it. No, hold on. I let you speak.
I
let you speak. Okay? She chose not to dignify the question, not to ignore it or not respond to it. She chose not to dignify the question, which is an entirely different thing. Okay? And as regards to Antifa, no one supports these guys. Okay? No one supports what happened to Andy. No, lots of journalists, including myself, were against what happened to him. Okay? A lot of us don't support what he writes or what he stands for, but don't support what happened to him. Okay? So let's be clear about that. And number two, okay, what Antifa represents is entirely different, and what they represent in their power base is entirely different than the president of the United States. So let's be clear about what we're talking about here, okay? And as far as, you know, the president talking about them being racist and all this other stuff, you think that's valuable in terms of distracting? If you think that's really valuable, the president is supposed has a much more valuable job ostensibly than they do. Okay, so where is he doing? What is he doing in terms of working for the American people? What is he doing in terms of, getting policy and things done for the American people? Won't the voters ask for him to be accountable as well?
Well, here's a question from a listener named Jessica, and I'm going to go to Jessica Levinson with this because I think it ties in with what we seem to be debating and are a bit fraught about here, and that is, she writes, the general characterization of the two parties is that Republicans play fast and dirty and win. Democrats fight the good fight, play by the rules, and lose. Republicans refuse to do their job and vet Obama's Supreme Court nomination, and they won both with respect to the Supreme Court and at the ballot. Should Democrats do their job and pursue Trump's actions and thereby lose at the ballot, or should they learn from the Republicans' playbook, drop the hearings, and win? I think it's an apt question, and Jessica Levinson goes right to the hearings, too, that are coming up, because there are those on the Democratic side who are saying you got to throw some bombs here and really go after Mueller to make sure that he says the things that we want him to say, and there are those who want to play this very soft and easy, and they're split in the Republicans, too. Some of the bomb throwers are there, but also some of those who feel do no harm. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question. I think there's a couple of assumptions behind the question, but in general, I think it is true that Republicans are simply better and better organized at doing things like, for instance, thwarting a Supreme Court nomination. I don't know that you could have gotten the support of Democrats to accomplish something like that. I mean, Senator Mitch McConnell has had an enormous effect on our country, the shape of our country, and how we think about laws and norms. And I think that the partnership between Senator McConnell and President Trump has been enormously efficient for a lot of Republicans. Now, I would say, though, I think that when it comes to Democrats and the questioning of Robert Mueller, I don't think we have to see this as an either-or. I mean, I think that Democrats have to do two things at the same time. They have to talk to voters about what is going to actually win elections, which, again, is I will make your life better by doing X, Y, and Z. But then they also have to do their job. In the Constitution, Congress has oversight authority and investigatory authority, and they need to pursue these questions vigorously. They need to talk to Robert Mueller about what he found and why, without thinking that vigorous questions will win them the election, because it won't. So I would say, you know, you have to thread the needle and dance on the head of a pin, or however you want to try and describe it. It's going to be difficult for Democrats, but I think that they owe the country those two things. They owe them fulfilling the constitutional duty, and they owe them trying to realize that
voters, I think it's going to be very rare that somebody comes out just because of what came out of Mueller's, comes out to vote just because of what came out of Mueller's report. I just don't think that's going to happen.
And we bring another caller aboard, and that's you. Douglas, thank you for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Michael. Appreciating the conversation very much. Michael, a little background. I'm going to do something people don't do. My first name's Douglas. My last name is Hart. I worked in the Reagan White House from 1980 to 1983. I call myself a Republican, but that's in name only, like a lot of Catholics don't go to church and don't do confessional, but still call themselves Catholic. I haven't voted Republican the last three presidential elections. I want to bring up something. As a political scientist from UCLA, I learned that the death of a country begins when its population, when its people no longer care enough to complain, when our population, Democrat, Republican, when we as Americans have become indifferent to the malaise, when we no longer care enough, when we are in a situation where there is nothing compelling us to do anything that is right by our Constitution and by our Republic, our country is dead. I believe that the four congresswomen love our country enough to defend it by calling out its flaws. I have no problem as a Republican saying that they are patriotic. They deserve to be here. They've met every American standard possible by any definition. I am tired of the Republican Party calling itself Republican. It is POT. It is the party of Trump. And that's where this country is going because of him. Let's remember, he told people that he has not voted Republican throughout his entire life. He has voted Democratic.
So we're getting off the charter a little bit, Douglas, but let me thank you for the call. I think it's important that you put your feelings out there, and I appreciate hearing from you. And I'm going to read a comment from Bernie, which dovetails a bit here. Bernie writes, as a proud, flag-waving liberal, I respect any American's right to criticize the actions of our government. I believe Representative Omar and Tlaib are correct in questioning our country's relationship with the state of Israel, and Democrats are correct in questioning our current immigration laws. But I also believe President Trump is correct in declaring America first in his policies and disagree with Democrats' inability of calling illegal immigration exactly what it is, the willful breaking of our immigration law. Laws. Unless Democrats can show themselves to be full-throated supporters of our democratic commonwealth, expect another 4 years of President Trump. And that is an argument that we're hearing. Jamil Smith, let me get your response.
Okay, let's be clear about what the immigration laws that they're breaking. They're breaking a misdemeanor. They're committing misdemeanors. And let's think about the punishment that they're suffering as a result of it. Think about the visit that Vice President Pence and a number of officials had at the detention center in Donna, Texas recently. And you saw a number of men, you know, all in that bin that was really not fit for anyone for, you know, more than 24 hours. Men complaining of being there for more than 40 days, wanting to just be, wash themselves, wanting to brush their teeth, complaining of all kinds of filth. And we've seen all kinds of reports of children being abused and left to, you know, be filthy and soil themselves. Is that really the punishment that these people deserve for committing a misdemeanor, for seeking legal asylum that's guaranteed by international treaties?
Well,
is that the kind of country that we are?
It's terrible and unconscionable. And yet, let me go to Jessica Levinson, because I know she only has a minute left with us here, and get your thoughts about this, Jessica, because we're talking about the Democratic Party certainly criticizing appropriately, as we just heard from Jamil, immigration policy, but without offering another immigration policy in its stead. And the same can be said of the Republicans with health care. They criticize Obamacare, but what do they have to replace it?
Yeah, I think that this is one of the things that makes voters so frustrated with politicians, which is that there's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of negativity on campaign ads, and there's not a lot of, and here is what we're going to do about it. And frankly, even when we do hear from our candidates, particularly on the debate stage, about here's our solution, it sounds so pie in the sky and unrealistic that I think it doesn't really stick with the voters. And this is one of the reasons why you know, if you look at the 2016 election, if you look at past elections, the candidate that won is essentially no candidate. It's why so many people stay home. And there's not an easy fix to that, but I think that it's entirely rational for voters to feel really uncomfortable and frustrated with their representatives on both sides. I don't think that at this point in our country, you know, both sides are equal in terms of where they are in policy proposals and legislating. But I think that this is why you frankly see such low voter turnout, because there's a lot of talking past politicians, not a lot of talking to voters about things that could actually be implemented.
Jessica Levinson, appreciate very much your being with us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jessica Levinson, professor of law at Loyola Law School. Let me go back to Matt Shoup, who is chair of the Contra Costa Republican Party, and we've been talking a lot about First Amendment rights of congressional representatives to speak their mind, to criticize President Trump. In many instances, we hear President Trump at least perceived as if he's saying, if you criticize me, you're criticizing the United States of America. Do you see a separation between President Trump, who is, after all, the leader of your party now, and what he identifies as being the United States of America?
Well, first, I actually want to address some of the other points are made. And Trump is focusing on those, you know, kitchen table issues that Jessica was talking about. The economy is doing better than it has in decades, and people are feeling it. And that's why the swing states that voted for him in 2016 were hoping for, and he's delivered on it. So what we're talking about are a few tweets, not policies. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are going to see the benefits to them. As far as the leader of our, you know, party or that country, I don't think that – I personally don't believe in the cult of personalities. I think that the president, although is the chief representative of our country, I don't think symbolizes our country to make a distinction there. And I think that the country will move on and continue being, you know, the United States of America after he was president and prior. I think that's a weird way of bunching everything together.
Well, I hear Jamil again. Jamil Smith?
Yes. I mean, I was in the room in Cleveland in 2016 when he was talking about I alone can do it. This is the man who has, you know, expressed numerous authoritarian impulses and has, on numerous occasions, equated himself with the state. So when I see him complaining about these women not loving America, frankly, I wonder if he's even talking about the country. I think he's maybe even talking about himself.
Let me read a comment, and we'll go back to you on this, Matt Shoup. A listener named Robert writes, the current president was one of the most prominent critics even before the last campaign of our country, government, and the previous president. Now he has the chutzpah to suggest criticism of our country, government, and president equals hating this country, and such critics should leave. How do his supporters rationalize this without being embarrassed?
I think it's being misinterpreted. They're hating on the institutions. They're advocating, especially AOC, for fundamental change in this country to its institutions. And they you know, along with Bernie Sanders and others and Antifa, they want to take down American institutions and reform it into a socialism, you know, with an entirely different structure. And I think that's what he's trying to address. It's not addressing him. It's not addressing any of these things.
Are you trying to say Antifa is part of the Democratic Party or vice versa? I'm not sure I understand the Antifa here.
I think that they've been given a lot of quiet support of, you know, they're not the Democratic Party is not working to condemn them. Actually, I believe their national chairman had a picture of him holding up the Antifa handbook that, you know, prominently and proudly, and it wasn't until Andy Ngo was attacked by them did he quietly take down the picture.
Saying Tom Perez had a picture of holding up the Antifa hold?
Ellison did.
That's not the chairman.
Sorry.
Hey, you're talking about Keith Ellison?
That's not the chairman of the Democratic Party.
Okay. We've got to get our name straight. Let me get another caller aboard here. Damien joins us. Damien, you're aboard. Hi.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I really appreciate Matt's contortionism too on this subject. It's wonderful to hear. This is politics. It's everybody's picking their shill. Trump's four freshman Congress women that do not represent the majority of the party but represent their districts and the people that elected them have the right to represent their districts, and they're popular in those districts, and they're equally as fervent people on the right that represent their districts. And then there's the whole milieu in between. There's relatively progressive and level-headed Republican governors and Congress people on the border that have a different opinion than Trump, and there are many people that have a more moderated opinion in the Democratic Party House of Representatives, and everybody's picking their shill, and Trump is the shill. And when we see a moderate or sane-sounding Republican, we say they don't. We discount them and say they don't represent the Republican Party. It's all Trump. And when the Democrats bring up, four more progressive candidates or four more progressive representatives, we like to point at them and say they represent the entire Democratic Party, and these other people are not part of it.
Damien, you get the final word here because we've come to the end of this hour, and let me thank you for the call. Let me thank our guest, too, Jamil Smith, again, a senior writer, Rolling Stone. Good to have had you with us, Jamil. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Matt Shoup. Good to have had you with us, Matt. Matt is principal of Praetorian Public Relations. He's chair of the Contra Costa County Republican Party. Thank you again, Matt Shoup.
Thank you.
And thank you to Jessica Levinson, who is with us this hour, professor of law at Loyola Law School. When we return, Richard Clark joins us, former national security advisor, and in the Clinton and both Bush administrations. He's got a new book out on cybersecurity. It's called The Fifth Domain. That's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.